You know, teachers really have it figured out with this whole no summer working thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you say they have it figured out, it's like they came to the table, like they had their meeting, their annual meeting. They're like, we were working 12 months a year, but let's chop it down to 10.
We can't be teaching these kids all year long. Need their brains to rest. Yeah. They need a rest period. Their brains will be overwhelmed. No, but at some point, somebody made that decision, right?
Yeah.
Whoever did that was a smart person. They went, you know, I think we need the summers off from learning. No learning in the summertime.
You obviously say that it's a person without children, because I would say that, I can't believe there's like still almost a month left in the schooling off season.
Wow.
These kids, they need to get their learn on in a big, big time way.
Yeah, you're a criminal. Goes by so fast. I've seen your boys grow so much, and here you are just wanting to be rid of them already. What a bad father. What a bad father.
They're allowed to come home at 3 o'clock. Yeah. But like, between the hours of 9 and 3, like,
What do you even do during that time?
I want them to go away.
What do you even do? What are you doing?
Working, grinding.
Yeah, no. So basically,
entertaining the masses.
I was going to say, basically, you're just upset that you don't get to suck at golf a little bit more, that you don't get to play golf one extra time, 1 to 2 extra times a week, and be completely terrible at it. I think you had one of the best takes I've ever heard, which is that you think you're the worst golfer on earth because the time that you've spent on doing it has amounted 100% to nothing. You get worse.
I know this isn't true because, like, once you get to, like, once you're a really good golfer, like, the amount of time you put into it does usually result in incremental gains.
Yeah, like anything.
But I swear to God, it's the only thing I do where the more I do it, the worse I get.
Yeah.
Like, I think I know why. I think I know why, though, too. Because it's not just like.
You're mentally weak.
Yeah, I put too, once you play a lot, there's like expectations, right?
Yeah,
once you do it a lot, you're like, oh, well, I've got this figured out, and like there's a baseline of competence that I should be showing here.
Yeah, people see you at the club a lot, and they're like, you're here often. And you go, yeah. They go, we should play sometime. And then you go, no, because you play a lot.
I can't have anyone watching.
Yeah, yeah, and then I'll be exposed for someone who's terrible.
If only I could just play by myself nobody watching.
You'd be amazing.
I'll be honest. Yeah. Like, I'll keep my correct score, and like I'll tell you if I'm doing well or doing poorly. But, yeah, I can't have people knowing what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're like the priest in Caddyshack. He shoots his great round alone, right?
That's
with the caddy, but the caddy was, at the time, basically like a subhuman, you know? So it wasn't someone that he would viewed as equal. Like, that caddy could have never gone to the clubhouse.
He survived being hit by lightning as well.
Yeah.
Should be noted.
Well, he's a man of God. I thought that should have been pretty obvious to you. Anyways, huge weekend for the Jays. And I was going to say, speaking of, you know, great takes that you've had. Last time we did Good Hour, we talked about the deadline and we kind of chopped it up a little bit about, hey, whether or not they should have added the bat and the internal options. And I'll be honest, I'd heard of Davis Schneider before, but it was always very much in, hey, they have a guy and he's all right, but it's kind of a journeyman and blah, blah, blah. And there's not really going to happen. What is he? I think he's a 29th round pick.
28. Hey, you shortchanged him around. He's a 28th round
pick. Yeah, he's a 28th round pick. That's pretty good, though, off the top of my head to even get it close.
By the way, there is no longer a 28th round of the draft. So
how many rounds are there?
I think we're, man, I think we're capped at 25. I mean, during the pandemic, it was like 10 or something.
Yeah. Right? All right. Oof, tough times. 10 rounds. Okay, so you brought up Davis Schneider, and you actually beat the drum pretty hard. You went, I want to see this guy. I think that he deserves a look, hit at every level, blah, blah, blah. And I went, all right, who cares? Why are we doing this? This team is trying to win a World Series, and this is supposed to be the most competitive window, what, in the team's history, essentially, right, leading into this? Other than, like,
you know, won a couple World Series.
I know, I was going to say, other than the back-to-back World Series window, you would say in the modern era, right? This has been the most competitive window that they've ever had, the one where the expectations were the highest leading into, like, the largest period of time.
And entering what should be, like, homegrown guys under team control for a while, getting better. Like, 16 – I'll never forget the spring training of 16 yep. and how exciting that was, and Jose Bautista trying to capitalize on that by like passing the napkin over to the Blue Jays brass as far as how much it would cost to re-sign him to an extension.
For sure, but we all knew that window was like the yes. 1 to 2 year window, and that Atkins right. and Shapiro had just taken over, and that they were going to see it as soon as the writing was on the wall, that one person aged grew one gray hair. They were going to go, yeah. yep, goodbye. Everything's done. We're moving on to the very next
thing. The bananas were not green.
No.
They were definitely a dark shade of yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bananas are like just barely turning yellow now. Like they're green. They're, expectations. Yeah, they're not green at all, you don't think?
There's maybe, you know, when it's yellow.
David Schneider's only 24 now. Now he's part of the core. Now David.
That's, all right. I will say David Schneider looked a lot like David Schneider against a real pitcher yesterday. But yeah.
The Blue Jays struck out everybody, struck out 100 times. At least he took some pitches. Like, yes. I will say. I mean, and he hit a couple
he took
of
some
hard
pitches. Ben's really invested in this kid now. That was the telltale sign of there will be absolutely no real journalism being done here today by this guy. There will be just nothing but.
Okay, so if you're just going to judge on the end result, you can do that.
No.
You know, he wasn't going to hit 700 for his major league career and is still hitting like 550 during his major league journey. But no, you have to like the process that's led to the results early, and even like the post game comments where he's like, hey, I was looking for a fastball and I got a slider and reacted like, oh, he has a plan at the plate. Like, how many of these Blue Jays hitters look like they step into the box with absolutely no plan? So I don't know what a Davis Schneider is over the course of however long his major league career is. He's a 28th round pick, so obviously at the outset part of that might be size, right? He's 5'9" that he goes under the radar. But like you said, he's hit at every single level throughout the course of his minor league career. And the power is kind of a newfound thing, but he's hit 17 home runs, I think, across a couple of minor league stops last year. But he had 21 when he was called up, which would have led the Blue Jays. So I don't know if the power stuff is real, but 370 on base percentage seems pretty real. And that does match the eye test that this guy can get into deep counts and so much of hitting. And the thing that is so difficult to acquire once you get to the major league level is pitch and strike zone recognition, which I thought was the main reason why Vlad was a can't miss prospect. But just, man, we have not seen it enough. This guy's had it throughout the course of his minor league career, and he's had to work for everything that he's achieved. And so far, so good. You can't, and he's got like positional flexibility. He fits easily into this Blue Jays lineup.
Yeah, sure. I don't know about the defense all that much. I think when we're talking about like positional flexibility, it's kind of like, yeah, you can put him in a couple of spots. He's not going to do it great in any, but yeah, it's fine. This story reminds me so much of Chris Colabello. I said this to you yesterday, but and I know Colabello was older, right? He was,
he
I think, 27
like,
or 20. No, he might have even been 30.
No, he spent like 6 years in independent league baseball.
But even still, he was a guy who in minor leagues and who in independent ball, like I remember his Twitter handle was CC Rakes, and that everyone said the same thing where it was like, this guy hits at every level, this guy hits at every level. He never got an opportunity, a real opportunity in the big leagues. And then 2015, he ends up being an integral part of the team that I'm pretty sure OPS like close to 900 in his season with the Blue Jays. And yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
history
he took
didn't
Justin Smoak's job, right?
Yeah. No, it was he was massive. And so I kind of wonder if this guy can be that to the Blue Jays. This unexpected shot in the arm, someone who actually ends up stealing a job. I feel like what we saw at least, well, how could you not say that given how hot he was? But you're right. The approach and just the look and the confidence at the plate and the way that the teammates were celebrating him with the Babe stuff. The way he kind of carried himself in the post game, I love that he looks like Julian Edelman, by the way. It looks like he's like Julian Edelman in disguise as a baseball player. I'm like, yo, so like, this is the same guy. I don't know. I feel as though if that's the case, that could really be a meaningful something. Not to always draw parallels to 2015, but yeah, that I thought that was kind of an appropriate one.
Yeah, Colabello was 31.
Yeah, okay, so he was older, yeah. I remember he was definitely more of a journeyman.
Yeah, well, I mean, independent ball, like he started his professional baseball career in independent ball. You want to talk about Chris Colabello wishes he was a 28th round pick. He was undrafted, right? In a Major League Baseball draft that had 50 rounds. He had to put himself on the map hitting wherever they would take him, which in his case was independent ball. I like the comparison for like the single season analogy. It was a guy that maybe you didn't anticipate impacting your team and ends up being a big part of it. I'm trying to like guard myself against getting too optimistic, but like I said again, he's 24, and like the idea that he's maybe not a mainstay at the top of your order. Like, this is a guy that, like, in his third game was hitting third for a team with World Series aspirations.
Yeah.
And then hitting leadoff yesterday.
Yep.
Like, I think those are unrealistic expectations. But could he be, like, a guy that keeps the lineup moving? Could he be, I mean, in your, could he be, like, another Whit Merrifield, although he brings a little bit different skill set? Whit Merrifield's not a big walk guy, but, you know, you maybe you substitute the hits for walks, because that's the other thing David Schneider hasn't really done. I think he's a career 250 something hitter in the minor league, so most of his on base value does come through the walks, and he's got a little bit more power, at least he's shown in the minor leagues, than Whit Merrifield. Can you get like a secondary Whit Merrifield throughout the course of your lineup? I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation for David Schneider.
Well, here's the thing. I just, to me, it's just be better than the guys you're replacing.
That's it.
And this is the worst timing for this possible, because Kevin Biggio was the sole reason. Well, not really. The pitching was amazing yesterday. Ryu was great, and then the bullpen came in and was solid until Hicks gave me a near heart attack, and I sent out like probably, I don't know, 85 negative Hicks texts to people.
I respond to those until it's over.
Let's just say that so far my experience has been very much like, I think I want to smoke cigarettes again. You know, I'd like a cigarette right now while I'm watching Jordan Hicks. But yeah, David Schneider, can he bump the odd Kevin Biggio day, right? Maybe not anymore. Maybe Kevin Biggio turned a corner last night. Maybe now he's a really important guy on the team. Is he going to bump the potential of having a Dalton Varsho day against a lefty?
That's
where,
I mean, to me, it's not even just a lefty. When I was envisioning, I think I might have even brought it up to you in last week when we talked about this after the deadline, that this team was, it looked so anemic offensively against an Orioles team that, okay, had like major league caliber starting pitching, but it wasn't exactly, you know, Cy Young winners coming through the bullpen doors.
No, but I thought that those guys did pitch very well, and I was frustrated too, and you're right, the pedigree.
And I know Jack Flaherty is throwing like the hardest fastballs he's thrown all season.
No, Jack Flaherty was money in the bank. I told you that. I said to everybody that would listen, he's the man. He's a dog. He's a playoff guy. He just needed to be somewhere where it was competitive, and he was going to be Jack Flaherty again. He's the man.
Anyways, the offense looked so bad throughout the course of that series, and there was so little that you could do internally, right? Like the deadline had passed, and you know, it was kind of a desperation play looking at the minor leagues and wondering who could help this Blue Jays team.
It was
definitely a desperation. Who knows how long Kevin Kiermaier's out after cheese gratering his arm? But yeah, I mean, looks like Dalton Varsho is going to be a mainstay in center field here for at least the next couple of days. Whit Merrifield and Davis Schneider sharing time left field, second base. I mean, that's my lineup. Like, I don't see why you need to mess with that for the time being. And it would, I mean, just because he was, what, 0-for-4 yesterday, I think he's back in there today.
Of course he is. You're finding out more of who he is. And, yeah, they better beat the brakes off this Guardians team, especially if Ramirez ends up getting suspended throughout the course of the series. But I don't know how long the appeals process is going to last for this. They're like, I don't even understand how long it is. Like, hey, you knocked that guy clean out.
and he got suspended for more games.
Yeah, exactly. Which we thought we were being the most reasonable people, and Jose Ramirez was like, no. I want to hit. It's like that Tim Robinson sketch. He can hit you. That's what he wants, is to be able to hit. Anyway, so yeah, I'm with you. I think that you run Schneider out there. I'm letting Varsho face righties, and I think that the defense is still worth it. He's a good defender. I think the defense has gotten a little overrated. I don't know how they calculate some of these defensive run save stats, and I go, I don't know.
He's been very good
in
left field. Like, nobody's going to question the defense, and he's a defensive upgrade over Whit Merrifield.
But I'm like, how could you be the defensive run save leader in left field? Like, that's the way I don't understand.
Well, yeah, and, you know, so much of his value in the defensive stats that I've looked up, I think defensive run saved is the one that you can't. No, sorry, it's the outs above replacement one, where you can't parse what he gains in center field and what he gains in left field. And the reason why he is evaluated as such a great outfield defender, at least in the StatCast version of the defensive metrics, is like the limited amount of time. He's been so good he's played in center field.
It's
overwhelmed everything.
Right.
And here's the thing, you mentioned Chris Colabello. Whit Merrifield's not Chris Colabello in left field. I understand it. Like, there are times where you benefit greatly from Dalton Varsho's defense. The difference between the defense of Dalton Varsho and Whit Merrifield does not supersede the difference in offense
yeah,
between the two.
No question. I'm totally with you on that one. And so, yeah, I think that's what you're hoping for Davis Schneider is just be someone that can play over some of the replacements, give your lineup a little bit of flexibility. And frankly, like, I was going to say, what's the bar to you? Because to me, it's like if the rest of the way he could even be like a 750 OPS guy, you would be thrilled with that, right? You would be over the moon that you had a bat that is at least just competent in your lineup. Because as you mentioned, there's just way too many games where they're completely anemic. And that brings me to the next question. I know the kid yesterday for Cleveland was phenomenal. What's his name? Sanders?
Williams.
Williams, yeah, okay. Anyway, he was awesome. Like, it was very, very fun to watch him pitch. I can't even remember how many strikeouts he had, but it was just inning after inning of dominance. And then he goes seven strong. Gavin Williams. He goes seven strong. Shulman goes, hey, get used to getting to or seeing this guy. And then the bullpen comes in and they poo-poo everywhere right away. I went, poor Williams. He's just watching from the dugout. He's like, thanks, guys. I gave you seven.
They got
strong.
Him one run too, man.
Yeah,
disappointing.
No, that was it. So, good for him that he pitched extremely well. But it did make me wonder how much stock are you putting into the offense from the Red Sox series? Because I was going to say that to me, the take is Davis Schneider actually already worth it. Like, if he just gives you that Red Sox series, given the import of it and how great he was and what a shot in the arm he is, even now if he's a bum and he gets sent down to the minors, I go, that was a hugely successful season for Davis Schneider that he came up at this time, hit two home runs, like had nine hits.
Games.
You don't think so? Against the Red Sox that were, like, you know, nipping at your heels and were right there, could have leapfrogged you ahead of a bunch of games against, like, horrible baseball teams? I said it was the most important series of the season, and I said until the next one, but it was.
There's no question. And I think the most important series of the season before that was the series immediately preceding it, four games against the Orioles, in which they couldn't score.
Yeah.
But no, you're absolutely right. There's an alternate reality in which they get swept by the Red Sox. They're outside of the playoff picture, and the Red Sox are like this team that nobody believed in, that didn't get reinforcements at the deadline, and all of a sudden has like this playoff fairy dust sprinkled all over their heads. Instead, they pound them into sand. And is Fenway Park like a very hitter-friendly environment? Sure. Is James Paxton having a great season? Did they have a great approach against him, like swinging early in counts? Absolutely. I don't think like all of a sudden the offense is fixed because you go through that series. Like I think is what you're alluding to, that like maybe that's just kind of a blip on the radar as far as the way this offense has looked all season. Like I don't think we're back to this offense looking like a top five in Major League Baseball.
No.
They are top 10, though. Like, pretty much across the board, they're a top 10 offense. And what's held them back has been the hitting with runners in scoring position.
The most
thing.
Important part. It's fine.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But, yeah, unless you believe something different, like, is happening with their the process when they get in those situations, which like I'm open to hearing. And I was tweeting about that last week about how their strikeout percentage goes way up when they're hitting with runners in scoring position, which, I mean, if you thought that they were going to regress just on the nature of like, hey, BABIP or, you know, the line drive percentage or whatever, then I think the counter argument would be then why are they striking out more in those situations? But yeah, this offense is not all of a sudden because they scored a quadrillion runs in three games against the Red Sox. Now some great offense. I will say, as far as like that being the most important series of the season to this point, like I've been all season long, I'm thinking about how this expanded postseason field, like whether there's going to be crappy teams in the playoffs, and obviously whoever wins the Central, and it seems more and more like it's going to be the Twins because that Guardians team stinks. That team's going to stink. And I do think, like, I mean, the Mariners are playing this ridiculous baseball right now, but outside of the Mariners, like, the Red Sox clearly stink, and they have serious internal problems there. The Yankees are abysmal. The Angels, like, haven't won a game in a week and a half. They've actually lost seven. Like, everybody stinks outside of the Mariners now. Like, I think it's the Blue Jays and Mariners. Everybody else... I mean, maybe they got a shocking run in them, but I think those are the two teams that we the only two teams that we should be caring about in this American League wildcard field now?
I think Boston stinks, but I will say, having, you know, prepped for them on Friday and having done a Red Sox series, that they have been one of the most, you know, Jekyll and Hyde teams in all of baseball.
Sure.
And they still have a decent run differential, right? Like, theirs is plus 30 yep. versus the Yankees, who are zero. You know, yep. the Yankees are... I'm with you on the Yankees. I don't think they're anything. Obviously, the Angels are cooked. Cleveland, yep. you just watch that. It's done. They were sellers anyways. Like, they are yep. just, you know, taking a knee. They don't even want to try to fight with the Twins. I think that the Mariners, the Red Sox will still be kind of relevant and hanging around. And especially since that they have that tiebreaker with the Blue Jays, that scares me just like a little bit. You know, that's why it was so huge that they actually ended up beating them and pushing that gap to something that was meaningful at five games, right? And why I was saying you need to bury the Red Sox, you need to change the perspective on the season. I like this quote. This one was from Chris Bassett, who, remember when the Jays signed Chris Bassett? I had on Dallas Braden, and he talked about knowing him and what a dog he is and how he's just a quote machine, competitive guy, like awesome guy. And he's had a couple recently. Like, you know who he reminds me of a little bit is when the Leafs, they had their locker rooms that just had nobody that was going to say anything with that was worth the damn, right? It was like quiet Tavares and Matthews who didn't want to say anything, and then a bunch of petulant guys who, you know, were annoyed that they were even questioned about doing anything. And then there was Jake Muzzin, and Muzzin would come in and just kind of dole out the serious, the actual team atmosphere, the expectation thing, like wasn't afraid to give a soundbite to the media. I feel like that's been Chris Bassett lately, is like he'll give you a morsel. He'll give you a something. And like, did you hear the one about the approach the other day against the Orioles after the Orioles series ended? And he went, yeah, they got a really good approach. I'm not going to give you much more than that. But he basically alluded to the fact that Baltimore has a better strategy at the dish than the Blue Jays do. And then this one was good. Quote, the Baltimore series was embarrassing for us. I think they just straight up outplayed us. And I think everyone took that kind of personally. And then we came in here, and obviously everyone knew our struggles versus Boston, but it was more so just like, listen, we're going to get the job done. We're not going to play like this. We came in really focused for this series, and we did our job. So now we've got to do the same thing against Cleveland, end quote. And that's what I'll say about, like, to, I don't know, round out this conversation about, was there anything that we actually learned about Boston? I do want to see a little bit more of that focus, a little bit more of that fun, a little bit more just, yeah, winning baseball. They looked lethargic. There was some really bad vibes around the Blue Jays when they finished that Baltimore series, whether it was the Springer storyline, whether it was just like where Vladdy was at with that, his approach at the plate, like the bow injury. It kind of all seemed like it was unraveling a little bit. And the beauty of that Red Sox series was, and why I was so happy about the Babe Schneider story, is it just felt like it gave the Blue Jays a reason to be having fun all of a sudden. They were tearing the cover off the baseball. They beat the brakes off of a rival. They had a kid come up and have a really fun stint. And now I want to see if there's any carryover there. Like, from not just the offense, but just sort of the personality and the... Well, like, we talk about the outs on the bases, right? And I want to see some of that stuff start to sharpen up as we hit the stretch run. We got, what, 8 weeks left of baseball? 6 weeks left of baseball?
Yeah, August would be a good time to stop making stupid outs on the base
it would
pass.
Be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that would be a smart thing. It sounds to me like you're a man that wants to bring back the home run jacket, that they're not having enough fun.
No, that's
they,
not.
They went too far in the opposite direction.
I agree with that.
I don't disagree at all.
I think that they like, part of the pressure of this team, I wonder, outside of the gate, was that they were like, we're professionals. Yeah. And then part of that led into this, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, man. It's all great when you're going really well, right? When you're playing good baseball and you're hitting home runs and you're living up to your potential, being super serious and being like the like no-nonsense club, that's great.
Yep.
That it's a long season, and that does not happen for 162 games. So, like, Matt Chapman never smiling, Bo Bichette never smiling, Dalton Varsho seems like a pretty professional guy, which is great. Like, you want pros on your baseball team. Brandon Belt does seem like a loose dude. But, I think
funny, Brandon Belt looks so mean, but it's like he seems to be the fun guy, the funny guy. So, he's got a little bit of that. What people say Kawhi is, but I actually don't believe, because I think that everyone's just a hostage to Kawhi, and so they have this, he's like a dictator where there's propaganda, and so people have to be like, he's the funniest guy. He's so funny. He's the funniest guy.
All right, let's see you do stand-up, Kawhi.
Yeah, exactly.
Open night.
And
open
whenever anyone night. Tells a Kawhi, like, he's so funny story, I always go, that's where this one went. That's, All right, I guess. I guess so. Anyways, no, dude, even to kind of build off of your thing, so I was thinking about this the other day. I think that part of the reason Varsho stinks so badly is that not only did he come here with the trade expectations, right, of, hey, we traded our top prospect for you, we're putting you in the cleanup spot, which he went, you guys have seen what I do, right? Why am I in the cleanup spot? And they went, no, we think you're going to be a stud. But I think that there was this air of, hey, you're, you know, the missing piece and you're going to make us more professional. And so what kind of fun is that when he's being asked to do too much offensively right out of the gate, but then also he's supposed to be kind of one of the faces of this new maturity plan? It just seems like a lot of pressure on that guy.
There was an absolute ton of pressure, and he's lived up to it. Like, yeah. I will
he's
say
lived up to none of it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No, he's lived up to the defensive side of
things.
And
sure.
This is, man, if you go back to some of the conversations I had with you prior to the season, and you know, I did lay out one of the, like, not nightmare scenarios, but one of the possible negative scenarios this season was people are looking at Dalton Varsho and wondering where the offense is if the Blue Jays offense as a whole is not producing, because last year he, for the first time in his career, played basically a full season, but also was a league average hitter, like slightly above, and built.
And that's
on
what we were hoping for, though, eh? That's what we were talking about in like the doomsday scenario, was that he didn't just add to that; that it was just he stayed that the league average league guy. Average. Little did we know it was, you know, there were depths below.
I will say that there is still plenty of time to turn the season around. Like,
hell yeah,
he was hitting seventh in August last year, right? Before turning it around, so I mean, maybe we are looking at a Dalton Varsho with an insane last 2 months of the season, but this is not out of the realm of possible. This was like very much on the table as far as possible outcomes for him. And you look at the Statcast page, like, not too much different this year than last year, honestly. Like, this is okay, maybe swinging at a few too many pitches outside of the zone, but never a big on base guy. Like, it was never going to take 100 walks in a season. And yeah, he's not on pace for 27 home runs, but again, he did that once, right? Like, so I don't think that this, unless the Blue Jays really did think, and you're right, they hit him fourth game one of the season for a team with World Series aspirations, so they thought he was more than the guy that they got, that they were acquiring last year. But I talked to Kylie McDaniel when the trade was consummated too, and I was like, what is the offensive upside for this guy? And he's like, yeah, like, I think you're pretty happy with what you got last year. Like, if that just, like, you get that again, like, I don't know, why does he need to do more than that?
Yeah. Anyway, not to relitigate that one, because I know we've done it a million times, but to attach it back to what we were discussing is, to me, the story of the Red Sox series was it took a little bit of the pressure off. It just felt like they were at a bit of a tipping point where Baltimore had whooped them. And I feel as though if Boston had taken 2 out of 3 and Davis Schneider doesn't do much, right? There's an alternate reality here where you're feeling like, oh my God, the Blue Jays are starting to now let the season completely slip away, and that they go into a funk, and that, yeah, the personalities in the room, who knows, but yeah, the pressure starts to get to them in a different way. And to me, that's what I'm saying. The story of the series to me about the Red Sox was not the offense, because I'm with you. I think it was a great offensive series. I don't think that now they're going to score 7-8 runs a game. I don't see that transformation happening unless, yes, he actually is Babe Schneider, right? Unless he is Babe Schneider and Bobichek comes back and Vladdy continues to stay hot and Springer, blah, blah, blah. Then I don't see that situation. To you, like, what's the story of that Red Sox series then? What's the story of the long weekend? That?
I mean, it has to be Davis Schneider, right?
Okay, so yeah, I guess. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, he's the fun story. I meant about more, like, so the team. So you do think that, because you are buying into the idea that he is going to end up actually being a somebody.
I think at least a league average offensive player, a guy that can get on base. And I will say that,
If he's that, it's a huge win.
The Verdugo thing is kind of eye-opening as well, that the Blue Jays have had, like, little moments and nothing that's really bubbled out over into the media, like, and maybe, you know, maybe to their detriment, that John Schneider hasn't actually come out during some of these mental miscue moments and put anybody on blast, and, you know, instead of maybe secretly benching George Springer for a game, coming out
publicly
and saying he's being benched for a game. But the Blue Jays haven't had that, and that's, you know, look at the Red Sox and what, and I know they beat the Royals in game one of their series, congratulations, but, like,
with a walk-off.
Alex Verdugo, Like, that felt like the season for them, right? Mm-hmm. That Verdugo shows up an hour and a half before the game, doesn't get into the game, and his manager says it's the low point in his Red Sox managerial career. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be a season ender for a team, and the Blue Jays haven't had that. I mean, that's the upside of having a bunch mm-hmm. of sourpuss but super professional dudes on your baseball team.
Okay, so quick couple things before we take the break, and I talk to you about the brawl and Kevin Brown, because I need to hit on those two topics with you. One, if Ryu is fine, how are you feeling about the six-man rotation right now? Because he was, and that team, the Guardians, worst in baseball, as I tweeted yesterday, yeah. making another successful bet, no big deal. 3-for-4 on best bets last week that I shared. So follow on Twitter and Instagram because I'm giving out just the winners, winners, winners. But yeah, worst OPS against left-handed pitching in all of baseball for that team. But the command looked good, and he looked like Ryu. And that was what was so disheartening when we thought his knee blew up for a second there. I think he's going to be all right because it looks like a contusion and maybe he can just, you know, battle through this. But yeah, so far, the six-man rotation, like what do you do with that? When do you start tightening it up? What's the end game here?
I mean, to me, there's only if like Hyunjin Ryu is a viable starting pitcher. I was going to say there's only one option, and there probably is only one considering that you need to bring Chad Green back. But you know, you do have Bowden Francis that you can option down. To
yeah,
the
goodbye.
Minor leagues, but like you're you can continue running a six-man rotation, which I honestly don't hate. Like.
Okay.
Yeah, Kevin Gausman, his numbers are so, so superior with an extra day's rest.
Okay.
The other option is optioning Alec Manoah, who, I mean, looked pretty close to his old self against a pretty good offense in Boston in a pretty tough place to pitch and, you know, had a pretty disastrous start there earlier this season. I'm loathe to like go down this hypothetical rabbit hole because like as we saw yesterday, you know, one comebacker to and it blows it all up. But if it were me right now, I'm optioning Alec Manoah down to AAA as your minor league starting depth. And it doesn't necessarily even mean that I think Hyunjin Ryu is the better major league option than him right now. But it's like, what else do you do? He's got options. And nobody else does. And yeah, if you're going to run a five-man rotation, he's the only guy that makes sense. Like, and as encouraged as I was by the Red Sox start, I don't think he's going to get this season to the place where you're like, oh, that's the best starter on this Blue Jays team. Or even the second best, the way Jose Berríos has pitched this season. So I think he's down to Buffalo. If things play out this way and Hyunjin Ryu builds off again, I get off a start against one of the worst offenses in all of baseball.
The worst against left-handed pitching all season long.
And like I think 28th in baseball overall.
Yeah.
But if he continues to do that, that's the decision I'd make.
Do you trust Hicks?
Well, I trust him to throw 102.
Yeah.
I also trust him to walk a bunch of dudes. Like that's what he arrived with that MO.
Yeah.
That he strikes out a bunch, that he can walk some people too, and that honestly, the swing and miss does not come from 102. It comes from the big sweeper where everybody's geared up for 102.
Everyone seems to kind of piece up like they get a piece of that 102. I don't know what it is. But
it's very hard to put it in play hard, and you saw one of the outs was, you know, jam shot to left field, right, that didn't even result in a sacrifice fly. That's what happens. No, the swing and the miss comes from the sweeper after guys are looking for 102. But also, sometimes he's going to throw 102 at your kneecap.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's going to throw four wild ones. But since, you know, April with St. Louis and
I guess the
rubber thing, like, he's been more in the zone. Is he like the best reliever in baseball? No. Is he a pretty damn good option? I'd still say yes. He's gotten the job done. Save for like his Blue Jays debut, he's gotten the damn job done.
You consider yesterday getting the job done? I mean,
scoreless.
I don't know the sweatiness of it and how that's going to build potentially in the playoff game. That's what I start to think about, right? Like I just the free passes come playoffs. That that scares me a little bit more now after having seen him a couple of times up close and personal. You know, it just.
But the thing is, if he didn't do that, he'd be the best reliever in baseball.
Yeah,
right? Like, but if he didn't walk people. Then,
yeah, but he does. Yeah. And yeah,
exactly.
That's, what
that's
I mean.
Why he's not Mariano Rivera. He's just like a good back of the bullpen reliever.
I just wondered if there is a scenario here where, come playoff time. Yeah, like Chad Green, I know it's a lot to be putting on, what, the scoreless outing now in Buffalo, but it looks like he's coming up now, right? And you should be at least somewhat optimistic about the player that he's been. And then Romano's supposed to return, I think, in 4 days, August 12th, I want to say, is the, because they went, hey, we don't want to have the long IL stint. Swanson looks like Swanson again. He was awesome again in that game. Mays has been great against lefties. I do wonder if there's a scenario where the big-time acquisition becomes such a walk machine that he's not, like, that he's not the setup guy.
I mean, I think he's in the mix. I think what's so great about this Blue Jays
is that they have a bunch of options. Sure, yeah. Having options is great.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, he's shown enough to... One of my initial thoughts was that there would be, like, a Wally Pipp thing where he would be so good, he would look so effective, and 102 would play so well...
That he's the closer.
That Jordan Romano would come back and you'd be like, yeah, you know what? We're going to do baby steps this thing. And Jordan Romano is going to be in the eighth and Jordan Hicks is going to be in the ninth. I don't think you're there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you ever will be there, but that's fine. Like, yeah, there's going to be days. You know what this does and it would do for me if I was managing this team is like each day is so different, especially when you talk about relief pitchers. Mm-hmm. Not only is there high variance year to year, there can be high variance day to day.
Sure.
And I would, in my ideal scenario, like everybody has a short leash. And if it looks like it's not going to be Jordan Hicks's day, well, then, you know, Eric Swanson's there. Or, Jimmy Garcia, who's looked different the last month or so. And then you can just kind of see what each guy has on each individual day. Mm-hmm. You're not locked into necessarily your eighth inning scenario for Jordan Hicks.
Yeah, except for you are locked into how many outs that they need to, or like batters they need to face. And you are locked into the fact that your offense, we also believe the reason they made this move is that they're anticipating playing in a bunch of tight playoff games and not, you know, destroying teams. So yeah, I think it's, anyway, all I'll say is that so far, the experience has been stressful. And I really don't like relievers who stress me out. And he does. So
again, the ones that don't stress you out are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, like, but I'm not stressed out when Swanson comes in the game, and I'm not stressed out when Mesa comes in the game. And I know I've seen a lot more of them. And this is a super reactionary take. This is just a first impression, okay? Like, this is nothing. My opinion could change drastically in a couple of days, all right? It's fine. I'm not, oh my God, is Hicks terrible? Like, I'm not trying to portray that. All I'm saying is that the bullpen's fairly deep. And in a good way, and they have another guy coming who might be solid. And it would be fairly interesting if the guy who walks people and gives free passes and has trouble with the command, that kind of crops up right now, and what it does in terms of where he ends up coming into some of these really important games. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Let's come back and do the two baseball, just really fights, suspensions. It's next on Good Hour with Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, two things in baseball this weekend outside of the Blue Jays. Well, I'm going to tie them both into the Blue Jays. You ready?
Okay.
I'm going to tie Tim Anderson and I'm going to tie John Angelos. It's John Angelos, right? The owner of the Orioles?
Peter Angelos is the senior guy, but yeah, I guess it's his son, John, is like the more hands-on guy.
Yeah, he's the guy that everyone's just taking free shots at right now. I loved every... I'll start with this one. I loved how every broadcast team worth a damn was doing the like ISO shot on them being like, and here's what we have to say. And then they just roasted this guy and I went, yes, I loved it. It was so good. It was just so refreshing and fun. And there was even, I saw them all. I saw every single one. I went through it. I spent at least an hour just looking at a broadcaster that I didn't know existed until yesterday.
Gary Cohen.
Yeah. Kevin Brown, didn't know him from Adam until yesterday. And now...
Really, he worked for us for a bit. Like, he was
that's awesome.
Radio games for
sick.
The Jays.
That's sick. I know who he is, obviously. Anyway, by all accounts, he's the world's greatest guy. So, I would kill to be loved like Kevin Brown is loved around baseball. The way people just immediately stump for him. I thought about if this happened to me, if I got suspended, what would the reaction be like, even if it was not for anything controversial. Like, if I was to get suspended for without cause, there'd be like zero people that would step to the dish. I don't think a single person would step up. And you wouldn't do it. We've already talked about this. You're the king of the cowards. You would never put yourself at risk for anyone else.
I would say, bring him back or I'm out of here.
Yeah. And then they'd be like, for real? You'd be like, of course not. I'm so sorry. Anyway, I don't think anybody would give me a public outcry. I don't think I'm outcryable, which is fine. I'm okay with my lot in life. But I loved the Schadenfreude, and I know you're a Schadenfreude guy too, of seeing, you know, someone actually get taken down on the internet that is just like a big old rich mean guy that did something bad for no reason. But here's my spin into the Blue Jays. Is it possible that this actually derails the Orioles season? Because everyone was kind of like, even as the Orioles beat the Blue Jays ass, I was like, yeah. I like this Orioles team, man. I'm sorry. It's just a cool ballpark and cool colors and cool players. And just, it's Baltimore, you know, I don't have the same hate for the Orioles like I have for the Red. Like, there's no Red
David
Sox.
David Simon, like, he's happy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just, it was a cool story, and they were likable. It just, all of a sudden, they're the baddies, you know? All of a sudden, no one's rooting for these guys because they know that that dude is the major beneficiary. Like, again, to do someone else's, Mad Dog Russo did one where he went, this guy's never won a thing. He's just crushing them. I loved it. Oh, I loved it so much. He eviscerated this dude, and I went, yeah, I don't want this guy to win. And I want, again, the ultimate Schadenfreude story to be that this kind of messed with the chemistry of this group, and now all of a sudden the Orioles are not the Orioles.
Buddy, it's like, yeah, there was nothing negative you could say about this Orioles team other than, like, okay, they didn't do enough maybe at the deadline with the Jack Flaherty thing, that they were in such a unique position. That
I don't
maybe
know. Jim Bowden said that they won the deadline for, like, the American League East.
I mean, part of that is, like, nobody else did anything, right? Like,
the Jack Flaherty thing sticks
out. And, like, apparently they were in on Verlander, and despite him being a Maryland guy, I don't know if he wanted to win. Trade clause to go to the Orioles. But, yeah, no, there was nothing negative you could say about this team. Yeah. Like, they have all the young players. And they have all the young players at the major league level, and they have, like, the best prospect in baseball at the minor league level, and they're in first place, and they have, like, the 28th highest payroll in baseball, and they got nobody under contract. And then now there is something negative to say, and I don't – listen, I really don't think players generally care about the plight of broadcasters, having been a broadcaster and having interacted with baseball players. I don't think they – are really all that concerned about most broadcasters.
All of you people should. You should care more. I'm sick of it. I hope this starts a new thing where we really deeply are concerned with
Let's hear from the players. Yeah, you mentioned a bunch of broadcasters. Let's see Gunnar Henderson come out and say, this is a travesty. This aggression will not stand. Probably because, yeah, he doesn't care that much.
He probably
I've interacted with Kevin Brown. He's an affable fellow.
Wow, you know K Brown?
Listen,
wow. Why didn't you do a personal post? Because you just did one that was like,
generic,
this is generic. You should have done, knows Kevin Brown.
He would never do this.
Yeah. Well, he did do it. We saw it.
I mean, he did do it. Yeah, he did what? He rattled off the Orioles stats at Tropicana Field for the last, like, 3 years.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I say this is the secondary piece of this? Can I do the slightest, the world's smallest zag here?
Okay.
So we're 100% sure this is everything, right? Because
No. That was the first thing I thought. And because it really, like, as much as, you know, billionaires are so in their own bubble and, you know, that, you know, they do stuff that doesn't make sense sometimes. That makes less than no sense. That's why I said, like, that's insane. It's not like, it literally doesn't make any sense. So is it possible that... This is why I didn't make it a personal tweet about Kevin Brown, because I don't know Kevin Brown.
But that
I don't know the true stories.
I hope this guy seems great and all these different things, but now the funniest outcome is that it turns out that it's like...
Buddy, and it wouldn't be the first time in the history of these types of news cycles that's happened.
Okay, this is the thing. The amount of confidence in which the broadcast media has had in terms of saying
it's a story that's been written by a reputable, The Athletic wrote a story citing sources that was exactly the incident.
All right.
That's it. But I'm with you. Like, yeah. My initial thing, and people were in my mentions, were like, are we sure there's something they're not something else going on?
Like, by the way, K Brown is so popular that even me saying this, I'm like, am I in trouble? Like, is some of you?
Well, here's what he should do now is parlay this into something. And like getting out of Baltimore would be the first thing. If I were the Angeloses, though, yeah. Honestly, what I would do is I'd be like, here's the truth. Here's a quarter of your salary. And you come to the microphone at next instance and say you were on you had a family emergency or something. Like, you make something up, you lie.
We'll give you
a quarter of your salary in a bonus so that you take the heat off.
Yeah,
of
but
us.
This guy also seems like a notorious cheapie.
Yeah.
And he's a weird dude in general. Remember he had the run-in with another reporter at he held like his only public interaction on Martin Luther King Day. Some people went down and one guy asked him a question about the ball club and he was like, "You disrespected Martin Luther King by asking." He's a wild guy. Like, he's just that was a weird one. And the guy was like, "You always set up all your public interactions on days like this to try to duck every single question." Yeah. It was a
smart move, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Tim Connolly was the journalist that, went toe-to-toe with him. And kudos to Tim Connolly, because I feel like, I would fold in these situations. As soon as, like, a rich, powerful guy was like, "Here, I'm putting you in your place," I'd be like, "Yes, I've seen TV." Mm-hmm. I've seen these
you
shows.
You have money, it means you're better than me.
Yeah, yes, I watch Damages. I was like, no, I'm out. I'm out on this. Anyway, all right. The brawl. The knockout.
By the way, sorry, just to put a capper on it, sure. David Simon, 55 minutes ago, did tweet about Kevin Brown.
What did he say? Oh, he went out on. He went too, eh?
Yeah, he said this is a deep echo of G.W. Bush invading Iraq a second time.
All right.
So not, not exactly downplaying the argument.
Boy, I like, obviously I'm a David Simon guy, and he does have some hilarious tweets. And, like, he does. He's gotten some good dunks in on people, but... Yeah, there is a boy. Anyway, moving on. The knockout. Mm-hmm. Jose Ramirez gets a wild right hook that lands on Tim Anderson's chin. It takes him off his feet. And it was cool because they actually squared up beforehand and they went, "All right, we're doing this thing." And much like Jose Bautista, who squared up, he, bleeped around and found out Tim Anderson. Yeah, boy, what a call. That was honest, truly, truly, truly an amazing, feel for the moment call. Is this a good thing or a bad thing for Jose Bautista? Like, this is what I'm saying. It's like, we're right about to put him up in the level of excellence. And then immediately before he goes up in the level of excellence, we're all reminded of one of his second most famous play to the bat flip, which is him getting knocked out by Rougned Odor. And he says, he was like, "I'll never forget Bautista being like, yeah, he didn't knock me out. I'm a tough guy." I was like, I think it was Adrian Beltre. Who was it there that didn't hold you up? You would have gone down to the ground too, much like Tim Anderson. But you did. You got held up and it's not as bad of a knockout. This is now the number one. It's the most recent. Or is this a good thing for Bautista because now this is the one and no longer is he the guy that got... punch. He's not the go-to reference for this anymore for the next time that it happens.
I think it's the second one. And okay. I think I'd like to think maybe that Tim Anderson understood that it was Jose Bautista level of excellence day upcoming this month.
And it was like, he took a dive for him.
I want to clean the slate for Jose Bautista. And, what a weird scenario that Elvis Andrus was like front row seat for both incidents. Yeah. He's like the Forrest Gump of guys getting punched out on a baseball diamond.
Yeah, if you see Elvis Andrus, get out of there. Get out of there, he's the Grim Reaper for guys who are about to get knocked out. Anyway, all right, I appreciate your perspective on that one. We got to go. We're going to do podcast-only portion today, so keep the fun going. Ben Ennis, you're on later today. Thanks for making time, as always, buddy. Subscribe and review the podcast. We will see you over in the podcast portion. All right, podcast only part. Just to keep that going, what do you guys think about the Bautista take? Like, good or bad for Jose Bautista leading in? I'm the opposite as Ben. I think in the long run, it's good for Bautista to a degree that he's not the number one
guy
who got punched. But I also think that his punch is so iconic that if anybody else does get punched, they're still going to roll the tape of, it's Anderson
the,
and
top
Bautista.
10 list will always feature Bautista or whatever. Yeah. The flashback pack will always.
Ventura's got the worst one, though, for sure.
Yeah. But I will say it's not Jesse Robin Ventura. Ventura. It's Robin Ventura.
Jesse Ventura, former wrestler.
I was going to say Jesse the Body, former governor. Jesse Ventura. Yeah. That guy loves aliens
or something, I think.
I don't know. But if he's in the aliens camp, then he's proven right. He's having. Although I feel for the aliens guys, because the aliens guys who were always believing, they're like, things are coming out. And the rest of us are like, shut up.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't
care. Tom DeLonge worked so hard. And
they all cared for so long. And then all of a sudden these things are happening. We're getting more and more people coming forward. And we're just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not buying the alien stuff. I'm not.
It was too many degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the fight. Yeah, I'm kind of like, it's good to not be the guy who got rocked in a baseball fight. You know what I mean? He is no longer the guy.
Yeah.
So that's good. But you're right. I mean, and especially like in this city and
next
for
weekend,
fans of
Saturday,
yeah, like people,
it's his day.
People are going to, that's one of the things you remember about Bautista.
Yeah.
He crushed homers. The bat flip's obviously number one and will forever be number one. But also taking one square on the chin from tiny little Rougned Odor is also in the mix.
Yes.
There's no like iconic call for the Jose Bautista one either, where they have that for the Tim Anderson one, right?
That Anderson call.
They're swinging! Down goes Anderson!
I mean, again, you see it feels like an Austin stat in that, like, did you look this up? Or is this just something like you're saying?
What's the call for the Bautista one?
What?
What's the call for the Bautista knock?
I don't know. It happened a long time ago. Like,
this won't be forgotten ever, this call.
I don't know. It's not as drastic as that one. It wasn't as big as a part of the story, but anyway, I'm not going to disparage the call having not heard it. And that is the number one Austin stat where it's just like, and they didn't even have a call. I'm like, no one even talked about it on the broadcast. I just think it's not the best thing leading into his weekend. The timing of this, people are now immediately a week away, they were thinking about that with Bautista because he just wants the one thing to be the bat flip.
Mm-hmm.
But it's two things.
It is two things.
Bautista's two most famous highlights
are two things:
hitting that bomb and getting hit.
Yep.
That's just a fact. There's no other secondary Bautista clip that comes anywhere close. I'm sorry. You can't find me a run saved or another bomb or another clutch hit. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Showing off his cannon from right.
Those are the two. 1A, no question. One with a bullet is the bat flip. But two is the punch.
That's right.
So could you imagine they ran that during his thing?
Thank you, Jose.
Yeah, they're like, hey, you did. This was a pretty big moment. We're going to run it. We're going to put it in there. Maybe someone will find the call. Look for the call, Austin. Like, now you have to find the call. It's part of your duty to find the Bautista getting punched call. It's going to be there on YouTube. Actually, no. Baseball's pretty militant about not having stuff on YouTube.
They're better, but they were terrible, yeah.
That's such a weird thing, not wanting to be on YouTube.
Not wanting people to see your stuff.
Hey, people could see your stuff. Like, no. We want you to
head on over to MLB.com/video.
All the kids are going to MLB.com/video. That's where they all go. Anyway, that's not the only brawl. It's a fighty weekend. The long
fighty
weekend.
We were fighting.
Everybody's scrapping.
We were swinging.
Yeah. Where was the riverboat one? What was that?
That was Montgomery, Alabama.
Okay, yeah.
That was
insane. Everybody saw it. Normally, you guys know me. Normally, I don't talk about videos on the pod.
Yeah.
Normally, I say, yeah, you know, you got to see this to have an effect. And while we're not on. We are on YouTube, so go watch our videos on YouTube, but we aren't underlaying videos on YouTube, and especially we're not going to put up a brawl. I don't think that SportsCenter
would be like,
yeah, show that part where he hits the guy with a chair again. And show that in your video. I got to admit, I've seen the video a bunch of times. It was one of those things where everybody shared it.
Yeah. The timeline was popping.
Yeah, full. But I still don't really understand the brawl.
So I've read a couple articles on it. Yeah, so I have like a loose, yeah. I got a loose
fill me in.
Explanation. So it was at the river port area of Montgomery, Alabama, where a lot of like boat tours are go out of and whatever. And essentially what happened was there was a riverboat employee who was confronted. Now people don't know why he was confronted, but several people confronted this riverboat employee and started coming after him, and things got aggressive, and that was the starting point to the whole thing. So people don't really know like what started the argument, but that's the circumstances, what was going on. Apparently one of the things I read was that the employee was telling them that they had to like move their boat to, because they were docking something else. And the guys, you know, three guys started going after this one guy, and
those guys deserved it.
A hat flies in the air, and all of a sudden things are popping.
Okay, this is what I love about the video. It is just immediate and brutal justice. And I don't know, there seem to be some people who get swept up in it that I don't know if they were originally involved or what the situation is.
It seems like people were coming out of the crowd.
Yeah, it just sucks if, you know, you were standing there not really doing anything and you're like, oh my God, they're like, you're with them. And you're like, no, I wasn't.
Yeah.
Speaking
of that, there's one video that I just saw 20 minutes ago. Because now people are isolating 5-second clips of the whole, right?
Yeah, but I like the one where they put the isolations all with the main.
100%. But I just saw one where there's one kid.
Yeah.
Who just runs away from everybody and dives in the water.
Yeah,
and it looks
like
he's just like, I'm not involved in this. I am swimming. No, not the kid who swims across to get in the mix.
No, I know. There's a guy that abandons ship and jumps into the water.
And he's like, I'm out of here.
Dude, here's the thing. That's the only guy with a brain.
Oh, yeah.
At all. And okay, I'm a big believer of you have to stand up and fight for your group. And so some of the guys that were running in and going, you know, if your buddies are getting beat
up. In the mix. Yeah.
You have to try and help. You can't just run away even if you think you're going to catch a beating too. Because the potential of it getting worse is lessened by your presence there, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's only one answer. There's only one correct answer to the question, do you have my back?
Yes, exactly. 100%. But those three guys beating up somebody all together kind of taking shots and thinking we're a tough gang of guys jumping one person. I hate people who jump, you know, group of guys. It's not one-on-one. It's three guys punching someone, hitting them in the side of the head, kicking them when they're down. That to me is about as abhorrent a behavior as you can have in a society. It's just awful, awful, awful stuff. I don't think that's tough. I don't think that's a fight. I think that's a jump. And I think that's trash. And for those guys on the boat, when it's everybody starts coming down and looking at them, and they're on the boat, and you can hear the one lady where she's like, they're scared. I was like, oh, yeah, they are definitely scared. Yeah. I would be terrified. I would have said, we all need to jump off the boat and go swim right away.
Or fire up the motor. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of what they were trying to do. And then it was just like, no, this is going to require something a little bit more. This is adding an element of danger to this. Just jump off the boat and swim away. But yes, they get the justice immediately, and I just enjoyed every second of it where I was like, you guys deserve this. You jumped somebody, and that's the worst part. Normally, a group of guys, jerks, jump someone, and nothing happens. Nothing becomes of it.
Yes.
They get away with it. Maybe one of them, you know, goes to jail or, you know, gets in trouble with the law. But usually a situation like that, it's going to end up with those guys being like, remember we beat that guy up?
Yeah. No, this was a grave miscalculation.
Oh, it was so great. It was so great. The only part that I didn't like but also did like was the guy with the chair.
Okay, so the chair, obviously a big portion of this conversation was obviously going to be about the chair guy.
That guy legit.
First off, apparently he's an old guy.
What do you mean apparently?
He's an old guy, which is adds a whole
apparently,
other wrinkle.
They were
allegedly. Oh, allegedly. Dude. We're alumni of Centennial Sports Journalism. Yeah. We know how powerful the word allegedly is.
Yeah, but I will say this. I like to think, this is my justification for this guy. I like to think that guy has dealt with a lifetime of racism down in Alabama.
Sure.
And he's just like, here's my time and I got a chair and I'm taking out everything that's happened in my life that sucked on you
he
people.
Is just, because he is just swinging and going for anyone that's around.
No, he, dude, he hits the lady.
Yes,
that's the part where you're like, whoa, she's just a downed lady. And that's the hardest, cleanest one he connects. I don't think that she'll ever be the same.
That chair is, we're assuming, a metal folding chair?
Yeah, I think it could, I assume it's a metal folding chair, but I feel like it could have also been one of those, although it didn't break. I was going to say it could be wood.
That was
by a wooden chair a aluminum chair.
First time I'm watching that, you're kind of just like, oh my, this is crazy.
No, it took me four watches to really fully grasp the.
The chair, the ramp up to the chair is just all of a sudden you're in a.
Yeah, I know.
You're in the what the F am I watching territory.
Yeah, I know. It really is Anchorman. Brick, I think you killed a man. You know, it's
surprised that Trident didn't get involved.
Exactly. That's the scenario here is they were all in a brawl and it was a brawl. And then all of a sudden Brick came with the trident and skewered somebody and killed them. And now he has to go lay low for a while, just like that guy did.
That was wild.
Yeah.
Because there are some great points in it, right? Like the kid, the 16-year-old who like jumps in and swims across and then ends up like body slamming a guy.
Yeah.
People were calling him Scuba Gooding Jr.
I like that.
That stuff is great.
Yeah, the guy swimming across has that dog in him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you got that dog.
There's some points where
I would, that wouldn't even have crossed my mind.
No, God, no.
That could have been.
He's also like in clothes, soaking wet. No,
I was going to say the only scenario where that crosses my mind is if it's my direct family, like blood.
Hmm.
If it's my mom, my brother, my sister, you know, like grandmother, yeah, someone, just three guys just beating down on my
bedside. Is that my grandma getting jumped?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's the case. But I'm just saying it's got to be that. Like for the idea that this is like a stranger or even like a friend, yeah. If it was you, I'd be like, Simon,
yeah.
I hope you're
I'm
going to
walk around the dock.
Simon, I got the police on the line. They're going to get over there faster probably than I can swim in wet clothes and get beat down with you. Anyway, yeah, the brawl was very intense. All right, what's next? Lots of fights. Yeah, August long weekend. Weekend.
Speaking of fights, Jake Paul Diaz.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm saying. Let's keep it going. Fights.
I watched it.
I watched the highlights. You watched it, eh?
Yeah, I did watch.
I was at a barbecue and I was having drinks with people.
I mean, the only reason I watched it, like, I was off. We were heading out of town the next morning. My wife was working, so it's like I was at home and figured, why not?
I just knew exactly. This is the thing. I knew exactly what it was going to be. I had no illusion that Diaz was going to win the fight.
No.
Like,
let me tell you, it was weird because, like, Diaz is, like, such a weird fighter, and especially, like, he was, like, fake wobbly at times and stuff. It was, like, just such a weird watch. But, yeah, I mean, Paul's just got to fight boxers at a certain point.
The one boxer.
You know, Tommy Fury is, like, I guess he's, like, a boxer, but he's not, like, a boxer. Like, I left that being, like, oh, yeah, like, he has no chance against actual boxers. Like beyond no chance.
No, but this is why I'm like tuned out of it. One is
totally.
I didn't want to watch Nate Diaz lose in a boxing match because I was like, anybody who has followed his career is like, the last thing he needs is a guy punch him in the head.
Yeah.
Like I don't need to see that, especially not in a fight that's worthless like this. I knew it was great. He gets his money and I'm fine with that, whatever. But I know Jake Paul is going to beat old MMA fighters boxing matches.
Yeah.
And like,
we don't have to do that anymore.
Diaz is a freak in terms of being able to get in shape and, you know, him and his brother being able to run and, you know, throughout their careers. But now he's an older guy. Like, it's not the same when he shows up and he's got like the milk bag body at 38 years old and Jake Paul is in his physical prime and knows how to box and has just been training on how to box. And even like when they did the whole, you know, he's like, oh, we'll fight in MMA and I'll fight you. And it's like, even if they do that, there's going to be some kind of rule that they end up putting into place. And who cares about that even too?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The thing I love about the fight game is not like the sideshow elements. The odd time, this is fine when it's like a point of entry. But now we know what this is.
Yeah.
One guy is still making money and they're, dude, it's going to continue because I saw that this was the second most bet on fight since, what was the first one? It was a big boxing match. Did you see that stat, Austin? Yeah, this fight took in so money on the books. I think a lot of people did bet Diaz because like a lot of people still believe, oh no, this guy's actually more of a boxer and like he has good hands.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, MMA is not boxing. But the casuals will not realize this. They just see two names and people want to see Paul and they're hoping he gets knocked out by somebody, blah, 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 blah. They're going to keep buying it. And I think that it'll continue to happen. As long as he can still get names that people are somewhat interested in that are at the end of their UFC careers, this will continue to happen. I really believe it.
I just want Paul Fury too, you know?
I don't even want, but it's like, why do I want that? There's two boxers.
I mean, I want it because I'm a Tommy Fury fan because of his Love Island run.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
As I'm on the record
for.
No,
but that's it. It's like, in fact, the last thing I want is Paul Fury too. It's like, if you're going to do that, just watch real boxing. Join Austin. He'll tell you, like, Austin, what's the next fight? What's the next fight?
Anthony Joshua was supposed to fight Dillian White, but that got canceled because Dillian White can't pass a drug test.
Okay, so then what is the fight? I will say boxing does this to itself in a lot of ways.
Oh,
yeah. It's like, what's the next fight? The boxing fan's like, oh, we don't know. We don't know.
That is a problem.
Yeah, that's not great. It's not great that he's filled this void and been able to successfully do it.
Yeah, but you're not missing much. Like the whole fight was the whole fight was exactly what you thought it was. Especially like it started off, Paul was way clearly the better boxer.
I saw that. I watched the clips.
Diaz can stay on his feet, so like got in there and like got into the body a bit, and then it just went the distance and the scorecards were obviously in favor. Like that, it was exactly what you thought it was gonna be.
Yeah,
so you don't give Francis Ngannou a good chance against Tyson Fury.
No, I do not.
So silly that's happening.
But that one is actually at least a little bit more interesting to me because it's a, you know.
Why?
I think that one's a little bit more interesting to me simply because Francis is going to have some time to be able to do this. And he's got a bit of the wilder potential of catching Tyson clean and knocking him out. And I do think that, you know, yeah, Wilder is a better boxer than Francis Ngannou is going to be, but I think that Francis Ngannou has the type of punching power where it's like if he's able to land one, this isn't going to be like, I don't think that Conor McGregor really had a big shot of knocking out Floyd because he was just really never going to be able to tag Floyd clean.
Well, and that was actually piggyback. That was 100% the case in the Paul Diaz thing. Like Diaz was never ever like he just doesn't have he didn't finish any punch. Like he was never going to knock out.
And the other part of this, Austin, where I feel a little bit better about Fury and Ngannou is that Ngannou's story is so inspiring, and the guy is going to get such a big bag of money that I look at it and go, yeah, you're kind of like still in your prime. You're trying to test yourself in something new, right? You're taking a really tough challenge. I talked about this with Ariel, and he made sort of this point. He's testing himself in the most difficult way. He's not diving in against some, you know, trash boxer. He's going right at the best guy.
Yeah, the guy who beat, like, Vladimir Klitschko. Yeah, that's like, what he's the greatest going, boxer maybe right ever at the lived guy. And never so, lost. Like, I think he's going to get destroyed, yeah, but man. That, it's not even going to be close.
I think so, too. I'm with you. I'm just saying that I think it's admirable that he's testing this. I think good for him that he's getting a huge bag of money. And that this will, if he does get embarrassed, this will end his, like, quote-unquote boxing career. He'll go back to MMA. But he got screwed over by the UFC, dude. And he tried to fight Jon Jones, and he tried to make money there. He fought through that injury in the Cyril Gane fight. Remember that? Like, I don't know. I just kind of feel like this guy is, he's due. Whereas with Jake Paul, it's like Jake Paul's not a real fighter. Tyson Fury is a real fighter, you know? And Diaz isn't preparing for that fight in a serious way. Like, I think Ngannou's going to take this seriously. He's going to really train for it. Diaz showed up looking like a bag of milk and did not care, much like everyone else who's taken these fights, other than maybe Tyron Woodley, who looked like he took it like somewhat seriously.
Yeah, but even like Tyron Woodley's hands were horrible.
Yeah,
his placement. Like, it's
he
such
was,
a different
man.
Sport.
No, dude, of course the sport is different. I'm just saying that there have been guys like Ben Askren who showed up completely out of shape, was not taking it seriously whatsoever.
You know who took it seriously?
Who?
Tommy Fury.
Yeah, but again, I don't care about these. I don't care about trash boxers fighting each other. It's about the names. I don't care. There's nothing on planet Earth that can make me care about Tommy Fury. I watched them both box.
Watch the Love Island both, season.
Yeah, no, I won't.
He has a pretty good season.
I will watch all of their fights before I ever see a Love Island season. Anyway, I'm over it. I don't know what it's all about. At first, I went, oh, Jake Paul's trying to create something, but maybe potentially there's some equity for fighters, and he's trying to create a world where they could start their own fight league that's different, and... Nah, it's not happening either. He's out for himself, which is what
100%.
So just yeah.
Logan Paul, I think, won at SummerSlam or something. I'm not a big WWE guy, but
SummerSlam
hey,
was this weekend.
I think so, or something. He flew in. That was part of the pay per view. He flew in to be there with Jake or
electric,
whatever.
Electric show.
Was it good? There you go.
Bloodline storyline continues. Just electric.
You watch wrestling?
I casually watch wrestling.
Yeah, so do I, but only Royal Rumble and the.
Wouldn't say that's casual. I'd say that's
love the
that's event based.
Yeah, if I can be on record
plus
about
the four big pay per views every year, Survivor Series,
no,
SummerSlam.
I don't watch those ones, but it's just like
Rumble's a different ballgame.
Rumble's the
10
best.
Out of 10.
It's truly the greatest event, especially now at the end of the Women's World Royal Rumble. So you have two, and
Rumble's
great. So sick. But no, WrestleMania. The only thing I cannot like the idea that it's now 2 days.
That's
oh,
a lot. I know.
Come on.
I know. I will say, what was it? The WrestleMania?
It was already too long when it was 1 day. I would show up to hang out with the bros and watch WrestleMania and just be there.
Coverage starts at like 2 with like all the undercard
six
stuff.
6 hours.
I'm the type of guy where it's like, if the boys are doing it, then I'm like, yes. And especially now that I'm getting older and it's like less frequent, you know, everybody's got kids and it's harder to get together. If there's any type of event and they're like, we're doing this, I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, unless that is, we're brawling. beside a riverboat, then I would say you guys are on your own.
Can I have a chair?
Yeah. No, actually, you don't want to be the guy in the chair in that situation
true.
Because then you're the number one target. And
I did say there are
those
four.
Actually, they didn't save him because there was too few people fighting back the other way. But yeah,
the article I just read said there are four warrants out with potentially more coming. And something tells me there will be more coming.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right, let's do a
couple quick ones. Yeah. So rapid fire. First off, we were just talking about this off air. Steph Curry jumped on stage for the Paramore concert. Cool or not cool? I think I know where you're going to go here.
It's cool for him.
Sure. You a Paramore guy?
I love Paramore.
Nice.
Yeah, I love Paramore. I was
Williams,
actually pretty
right?
sad that I didn't get to go to the Paramore show when they were here and played at Scotiabank. I think it would be cool to see like Steph Curry up on stage if you were a fan of Steph. Just the, like people are always like, "Oh my god, a celebrity, like it adds to the night." So there's something about that I think is cool for people, but yeah, he jumps on the microphone and he's just there. He's kind of bopping around, and I'm going, yeah, it's a little cringy. It's a little cringy. I think that and you see this like LeBron's done this where they jump on stage with like hip hop artists and you're at a show. So there's a cool factor of seeing someone in real life where you go, holy crap, Steph Curry's at my show, or LeBron James is up on stage at my show. I do think Paramore fits into this. I do have respect for the artists where I go, really? Like, you want them up there doing this thing?
So like, that's what I was going to say. I would be such a, like, a, you know, prima donna that, like, if someone was at my concert, I don't want a bigger star coming on the stage with me. You're here for me.
But Paramore does get a ton of social media clips and people see it, so whatever. But it was
also
like,
true.
I don't know. To me, it's pretty cringe. To me, it's just a thing of, hey, man, you know, do you have to be everywhere and to have the spotlight on you at all times?
Because his first rap verse also came out recently. Did you see that? Steph Curry?
I don't want to ever see that. Mm. I'd like that to be put in the same hall that the Ark of the Covenant was put in, that storage facility at the end of Raiders of the Lost.
I'm going to go ahead and toss that in the group chat for the boys.
I want to see the forklift place that box high up in... No one finds it ever again. Anyways, what's next?
This one wasn't in the show sheet, but quickly, a couple clips this weekend floating around of more hockey players at weddings. It's been a big hockey player at wedding summer. There was Johnny Gaudreau on someone's shoulders. There was Bergeron and Marchand were doing some sort of little dance routine.
I can't express any care.
What type of wedding guest are you, though, is the question.
A drinker. I hang out at the bar and I drink, and then...
Are you a dance floor guy?
Yeah, if I...
Hard dance floor?
Not like I'm there the whole time, but I'll mix in some appearances. No, I'm chatty at weddings, and like that's the thing. I like to talk, clearly, and so I'm a hang out near the bar and converse with everyone.
You're meeting new people. You're not sticking with like your group, but you're...
No, I'm definitely not a group sticker.
We're branching out. We're talking to people.
Flat out, I had a breakup because I was at a wedding paying no attention to my date because I was mixing it up with everybody and she was pissed off. And she was like, what the hell? You never even...
Did she know anyone?
You got broken up for not paying attention to somebody?
What?
She broke up with you because you weren't paying enough attention
to
her.
No, it wasn't the sole reason, but it was part of a fight that led to a breakup. Yeah, it was a big part of a fight that led to a breakup. And that was me at a wedding, you know, talking with everybody and kind of abandoning her. And yes, she didn't know anybody at the wedding. It was a wedding I was friends with people at. And so I was socializing a ton and catching up with a bunch of different people. And yeah, I was just drunk. And I was like, but that's who I am at a wedding. I chat with every single person, essentially. I'm going to meet your aunt at the wedding.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Like, I'm going to meet everybody there. I'm going to have a chat with everybody there. I'm going to drink a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on the dance floor grooving, too.
I'm a dance floor guy. I like to hit the dance floor.
Yeah.
A lot.
What do you do, waving wacky inflatable tube?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... Look, the moves aren't good. There's some two-stepping, some pretty basic two-stepping. I'm
the
type of guy...
the whole time? With your girl?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
So you and your girl hit the dance floor and you two just stay there the entire night?
A lot of it. I mean, like, not the entire, but most of it. And there's a lot of...
You don't drink enough.
There's two-step... Well, so that's what it is. It's one of us tags each other out, goes to the bar, you know what I mean, comes back. But there's a lot of two-stepping and a lot of jumping. You know that, like, that jumping on the dance floor move?
Yeah, that's so funny. It's like...
Because that's like...
Every white guy wedding is always shout. Because it's just like, that's the one dance.
Now jump.
So it's like people know how to do the dance to it. Yeah, and like, we did a dance.
It's
like, how long are we going to have this at weddings? It's fun because, like, the last wedding I was at, it was a really, really fun version of us doing shout. But 9 times out of 10, I'm like... Oof, this part of the evening, fine, you know. And even when I'm drunk, it's like takes me a little bit to like muster up the get rid of the cynicism of doing that song for the millionth time. It's just like, you know, oh wow, wagon wheel at a wedding.
There's some there's some classics that they get played.
You
know,
do it. It's just I don't know.
I went to a wedding last summer. This is unrelated really to this, but it was just funny. I went to a wedding last summer where the DJ was killing it.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the
I'm
hits.
A band over DJ.
When the, it's a band, band's great for sure.
Band, but this DJ is always like,
DJ was doing a good job playing the hits. And all of a sudden, all of a sudden, he like walks in front of his DJ booth and everyone's like, what's going on? And reaches over and picks up a guitar and plugs it in and just started for about 10 minutes soloing over tracks over other tracks.
That's actually pretty sick.
I mean, it was cool, but it also like it went from the dance floor was popping to everybody was like, what's going on? Because like he was good, but he wasn't a pro guitar player. So it was kind of like, now we're just watching this guy for 10 minutes.
I was going to say, I've seen this before in different versions. I've seen the lead singer tries to be too involved in the wedding.
Oh, that's a good one.
Where it's like, mom, get up here, you know, like, or like, you know, who's having the most, and they're just trying to kind of like dance around, and all of a sudden they think they're like the de facto MC. You're like, no.
No, our best friend who actually knows our family is the MC.
Song to song. Yeah, exactly. Like, just... there's no need for this. I actually remember I scouted with one friend, and they picked this woman, but she even said at, cause you can go to these little wedding, tryout band things, right? You go to a hall and there's a bunch of different people and they're all part of a wedding. And I went with a friend to be like, hey, help me pick up my band. So I was like, yeah, sure. And they go up and it's actually like basically a bunch of session musicians that come in and they're like, this is the price for this group. This is the price for this. Anyway, they keep rolling. But the one girl's like, when I'm singing at your wedding, like I'm a part of the wedding. And me, I went like, ew, worst case scenario. My friend, she was like, I want this person. She's got personality. So some people enjoy it. Okay. But yeah, to me, it's like going to an amateur comedy show where I go, I respect that you're trying and I respect that you're putting all of your energy into this, but I cannot help but cringe. Like I'm sorry, but it's not funny and I don't relate to this.
I don't enjoy this.
What were you going to say, Mackie? You look like you're all queued up.
Yeah, but not about this. I agree with you on the wedding singer.
What were you going to say?
I mean, the random thing I was going to say, wedding singer, good movie by Adam Sandler.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
There's nothing, there's this, the Somebody Kill Me Please song. Yeah. And then followed by John Lovitz standing at the side of the stage saying,
but yeah, you're right. I would hate having him as my wedding singer.
I'm reaping all the benefits. Yeah, that's a, like all-time classic.
Sometimes
moment.
I got to bring the sports in though, JD, because I remember Simon, you know, more of a Love Island guy. That's fine. We accept it. We love him.
We do not
Eric
accept
Carlson
it.
Getting traded to the Penguins.
Hey,
can we get some thoughts on that, please?
Good job. Okay, couple quick things.
It's tough when I'm the only one suggesting the podcast only bits.
Couple quick things on this. Number one, Dubas accepting both the presidency and the GM job.
Classic.
Poor family time.
God. No, I know.
Those kids.
Just, yeah,
that was great.
It's just anybody who believed the family thing and who actually played that card.
Yeah, that's gone.
I'm such a sucker.
No, but here's the thing. But some people were suckers. But what's so crazy, and this is the Dubasite religion thing, where it's just there's some people who will never, ever admit to his like wrongdoing. The only one, weirdly, they'll go, he didn't do good with trading the first round pick for Foligno because Foligno was in direct contrast with what...
because he has bad charts.
No. That group wanted Taylor Hall, and it was him. Yeah. And then they view it as like, that's the only bad one that they ever did. So the Dubasite group has seen the guy, you know, get emotional about how he would never do this to his family. He'll only be a Trump. Well, what was he supposed to do? And they spin the logic and they do the thing. It's like, okay, yeah, he took a job in hockey. And the one that they were always rumored to be around the mix on too, like that I heard from people as early as, I want to say, December of the year, you know, last year.
We had Frank Cervelli on. And he was talking about that.
Oh, but I
FSG
heard it
when they were buying.
No. Yeah. Like, yeah, this was a long time ago. So he ends up going there, but then he takes a even bigger role, something that's, you know, being the president, you're supposed to be doing all kinds of different stuff now. So it's like, okay, less family time. And he's like, oh, I'll also be doing the GM. Anyway, it's so ridiculous. And you can understand the frustration, and this is what I mean, of MLSE and of Brendan Shanahan when they saw that move and they went, are you kidding, man? Are you kidding? You're really going to play this BS and try to garner and curry public favor as a leverage move against us when we know this isn't 1 ounce of true? And when we've actually been like, yeah, we'll give you the private plane so that you can travel to see your family. It's like, anyway, I'm really not trying to kiss ass to MLSE here. It's just, it's so embarrassing that Dubas played that card and that the result has been this.
Yeah.
And that some people refuse to just like look at it for what it is, which is what it always was, which was a guy that was trying to use that as a leverage play, trying to garner public sympathy and, yeah, wanted to be viewed as the family man when it's like, yeah, man, okay, I'm sure. Anyway, he's probably a fine dad. He's probably a fine husband. But you don't get to being in those jobs by having your priority number one be your family. I'm sorry. That's why he is where he is. Priority number one is his job, which is fine. I'm like that too. I want a career. I want a job. I'm geared that way more than I am for family. I understand it. I don't judge it whatsoever. But I also don't go out there and cry like, I don't have time for a family because I, anyway, moving forward, the Carlson trade. I kind of like it. I know that everyone wants to crap on it. I just think it's decent. What I will say is it's interesting that Kyle Dubas, with all of this time with his core four or whatever, is deciding to kind of go back to the well on this, that they only retain 1.5 mil and you bring in Carlson. And you now have an aging Geno Malkin, an aging Erik Karlsson.
It's an old roster.
Dude, it's very old.
It's an old roster.
And to me, I will say that it reeks of the Yankees, where you go, no. You can't have the oldest roster in a sport and then expect to have success. Here's the thing. Do you really think all four of those guys come game 14, game 15, game 16 of the Stanley Cup playoffs are going to be in tip-top form and they're all going to be healthy at the same time? They're all going to be solid and they're all going to be contributing? Like, I don't see it, man. I just don't see it. I do not see that scenario. But here's what I like about it is that they're playing for the ring this year and they're going, you know what? Sidney Crosby's done a lot for this organization. And what could help this group more than this at that cost? You get a first round pick and a second round pick and it's money, you know, and you moved out what? Granlund? What was the meaningful piece that came off the roster? Petrie? Like, you just added the Norris Trophy winner. Okay. So we can all project all the bad and about all the injuries with Carlson and blah, 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 blah. Like, go on down the line. I do think, like, one of Carlson's biggest injuries was a total fluke, like the skate.
Yep.
I don't think that it's likely that he's going to be as dominant this following season as he is the year before. But as a proven playoff player, this is a guy who is going to create instant offense. I don't think that the Penguins' path to a Stanley Cup is being a tough, gritty defensive team anyway. So They're just sort of leaning into the identity of them trying to score. Like, have you guys seen clips of Geno Malkin playing, like, in his own end? He is genuinely, I would say that there's a strong case that he is the worst defensive forward in the NHL.
Yeah, it's not good.
Like, he is beyond horrific. And so I don't think Erik Karlsson's adding that element to the team, but it's just like the same reason why I liked him kind of for the Leafs, which is you're not having to spend too much to get him. Although if I was the Leafs, I wouldn't have done like this version of a trade. Would have had to involve somebody else. Like, I always said that if you brought in Carlson, you removed one of the core four guys, but then you also got back pieces from San Jose, that would have interested me. Not the one where you're just being like, yes, and we're adding this dude and we're moving out pieces and then, yes, going even more offensive. But yeah, I just don't mind it for them because I'm like, what else were you supposed to do? And you're kind of in a little bit of, you're not in cap hell because these guys are, you know, there's things that can happen here, but like, you're not getting off these contracts.
No. And like, it's a window move, right? Like,
that's what I mean.
If you're the Penguins, all you're trying to do is win another cup while Sid's there. That's the only goal. You're not trying to do two timeline things. You're not worried about the youth. Like, it's a window now.
Exactly. And it's like,
it's a window right now.
Sid has two more years left on his deal at 8.7, by the way. God, what a steal. That guy signed. That guy is just the legend. It deserves more credit that he signed a 12-year deal at 8.7.
8.7, yeah.
Like, that is a captain. That is a leader. That is just the way you do it. And some other guys want it all. They want it short, and they want it the most. And
I guess that's the next question, right? Do you think the Carlson trade leads to an end of the logjam here, as we're seeing with NHL offseason moves, or is this,
nah,
is this kind of the
end? I think that this is like, yeah, like, what's the log? Like, what are we?
Well, Nylander's contract, right? Whether or not they'll trade Nylander too before the start of the season.
No, I don't think that. Here's my guesses. And I actually kind of, maybe next week, I'll do a little Leaf check-in segment and start to, you know, I don't know. Well, I was trying to think about the shape of it the other day. Because, you know, I want to talk about Leafs, even though it's offseason, and just kind of makes sense. It's been completely dead and quiet. But, yeah, just some thoughts on sort of where they're at. My predictions are that they sign Matthews to, as of today, that it will eventually be a 5-year deal for Matthews. I think that he'll give that little bit of extra time, and that it's going to be a ton of money. It's going to be around like $14 million. And I think that the Nylander thing just it goes into the season.
Drags, yeah.
Yeah, it goes into the season and it goes unresolved. I just don't see a scenario where it doesn't. The weird thing, the wild card piece that makes me believe something else could happen is still Trey Living with his statement of, I learned from the Goudreau thing and I'm never going to let somebody walk for free again. But yeah, anyway, I actually don't mind the trade for the Penguins. And I think that the trade for the Sharks, obviously, like they're in a rebuild and you go, hey, we traded the Norris Trophy winner. We only got a first and a second and we retained 1.5. I actually think it was a huge win for them. Like that's a really good trade package. I think for Carlson, given where they were at as an organization, the amount of teams and the value of salary cap space, like I actually think that the Sharks did extremely well there too. So I don't mind it for the Pens. I get it's risky. I don't think they're winning a Stanley Cup. But like you said, Simon, the window is just at the very end of these guys.
There's no point careers. Of not going for it.
Yeah, and what it would do for Sidney Crosby's legacy is, and for Carlson's and for Malkin, for all these guys, Letang, if they were able to grab one more.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's just it. It's like you're pushing chips in the middle for guys that really did help build your organization, and I don't mind it. And then, yeah, what happens? They're not hoping to have a strong first-round pick next year or second-round pick where they had it. What happens? Like, Sid probably takes a much friendlier deal again. I don't see him, you know, cashing out when he's... How old is he going to be at the end of his contract? Because it's 2 years from now, and I think he's an 86.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Right?
Or is he an 87? Is that why his number is?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
he's
of course. Yeah. No, he's an 87. Yeah, duh. Like, yeah, anyway.
He's 36.
No, so he's 36. Yeah, so he's 36. So it's like, yeah, he's going to be 38 at the end of that contract. Like, he probably retires. Like, and then you've got a little bit of Carlson left on the books. I don't know. It just, you're going into the rebuild mode then anyways, and you're playing some old guys. And
yeah, that's the thing, right? Is like whenever that era is done.
2 years. It's like, this. Yeah. It's the end
exactly.
of Sid. It's these
Correct.
Last 2 years.
Correct.
And you went out and got someone with a lot of upside for the last 2 years of Sid.
Correct.
I don't hate it. I'm not criticizing Dubas for this move. I think that it's a decent, prudent move, upside move to try to get Sidney Crosby to one more Stanley Cup, which we all know, knowing Sid, that's everything that he would ever want more.
Yeah.
God, it breaks my heart because I'm seeing all these videos on Instagram of like young Sid where they're like, he's just 20 years old, you know, bombing around the dressing room. I'm like, that was yesterday? He's what? He's 17 years older than what those videos?
We're really old, JD. really old.
All right, let's go crawl under a rock somewhere and perish. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Subscribe and review. If you want to play Botano, hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at JD Bunkus. I'll see you tomorrow.